Fancy a game?
Grass grows, birds fly, sun shines, and brother, I hurt people.
You know what I think I'm gonna do then? I'm gonna take this right foot, and I'm gonna whop you on that side of your face. And you wanna know something? There's not a damn thing you're gonna be able to do about it.
Medicare, I don't really know what that means, but it seems to give me a lot of energy.
It's Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
Hello, Hanukkah. Ryan Wallace will join us a little bit later to celebrate the end of the Golden Knights playoff push. They're in. The Raiders screwed up and won and then fired their general manager because of it. The Aviators are officially our team, but that is not our logo. But we're going to start with the Running Rebels. You know, we lost at Illinois. They covered the spread, though. We lost by three. It was an ugly game. Like, I didn't think UNLV played well at all until the final 5 minutes or so. That also coincided with Illinois deciding to take their foot off the gas and just trying to run the clock out. And UNLV was like, ooh, we can get some shot clock violations if you guys just don't shoot. and then UNLV scored. They actually scored a few times in a row to have a chance in that game. But they could have tied it. Final 20 seconds, down three, had a chance to tie this one up. So we're going to go overboard and break down the final possession for UNLV. 13 seconds left, down three. Amori Hardy, my point guard. That's my point guard. Brought the ball up the floor, tried to create his own shot, couldn't. Ultimately threw the ball right to a defender for a turnover. Not ideal. Lots of people yelling that Marvin Minsey should have called timeout. The possession came off of some Illinois free throws. So, like, UNLV could have conceivably said, hey, they're shooting free throws. This is the play we want to run, guys. You're not doing anything. He's just shooting free throws. So, like, I don't have a big problem with the whole not calling timeout at the end of plays like that, because they literally could set it up right there.
I mean, also, their half-court offense isn't something I would be like,
we need more of that.
Like, let's rely on us.
So I don't mind the no timeout thing that much, just in general. I don't think, I'd have to look it up, I don't think there's been any discernible evidence that calling timeout versus not calling timeout helps you score more. I think they're basically the same in terms of how often you convert in those situations. But here is Marvin Menzies afterwards, because this was, again, they had a chance to tie the game, and they don't even get a shot off. They end up with a turnover on a no-pass possession, too. I mean, Hardy tried to pass it, and it turned into a turnover. But this is what Marvin Menzies had to say after the game about that final possession.
When Brad called a timeout the previous time, we set up our play against a man or a zone, and they guarded it really well, and we didn't really screen. We typically run the play against man, and so we ran it against man or zone. The bigs got confused on where to go screen, so you got to use a little instincts there, but that's not their fault. I should have gave them better direction, I think, on who to screen if it was a zone. It ended up, I think, in man, actually, but they just didn't get to the right spots.
So you hear him actually say there that they set up their play in the previous timeout by Illinois, which is actually doesn't make any sense, because Illinois called a timeout before UNLV's second-to-last offensive possession, so they set up a play for that possession. Then they fouled and had the free throws. So either Menzies is telling us that they set up two plays in one timeout, in which case he looks kind of dumb because they clearly screwed up the second play that he set up, or he's confused and doesn't know when they called the timeout for him to set up a play. But the bigger takeaway for me on that is Menzies is going on and on about zone defense. And he's like, we had a play for man or zone. Illinois wasn't in a zone. And like he's saying that they missed the screens because they were in a zone, and the guys got to have better instincts on where to screen. Like, it's the most irrelevant point he could make after that possession. Like, they were in man defense. That's what they were in. You ran a play for man defense, and it did not work. So, like, I don't know why. Like, he spent the majority of his answer about the final possession talking about how they could have been in the zone, and then at the end he's like, yeah, I think they're unmanned anyway, so none of that matters. So, like, that to me is like, that completely unsatisfactory answer to that last possession. Like, if you're the coach and it's like, oh, well, we ran a play for man or zone. It's like, but they weren't in zone. Like, you can't use that as some sort of excuse as to, like, why it didn't go well. They were in man, and you had a play for man.
My favorite, and I didn't obviously pull the sound because that would be good. My favorite was during a post game, they asked him about it, and maybe not that post game, but a different post game interview. They asked him about that possession. It was like, okay, so what happens if the screen or the pick doesn't get set? Oh, I told Amari, just go for it. Like, right. Your backup plan was
go for it.
Yeah, just you do you, man.
And like, with all that being said, they did run a play. Like, they attempted to run a play. The problem was Hardy, for the most part, ignored it. Like, Robotham was supposed to come off a couple of screens, and the defender did a good job of jumping the first one and not getting screened. And then Shakur Justin just did not screen. He just did not set a screen. So Robotham pops to the top of the key and he's covered. The thing, though, is that Amari Hardy had already ignored him. Like, before Justin missed on the screen, Hardy had already decided this was his shot. So the bigger problem wasn't so much that, oh, they thought they were in zone, maybe, or that he didn't call the timeout. The bigger problem was that Amari Hardy just ignored the screen, or ignored the play. And in this micro example, I think the players are more to blame than the coaching, because when Amari Hardy's just like, all right, I'm going. I don't care that Noah Robotham's coming off a pair of screens. I'm going. And then he doesn't even shoot it and throws it right to a defender. Like, I don't know. Like, it's not a good reflection on the coaching, but I think that's more individually of the players.
How much are you buying into the Twitter explanation of, oh, he was trying to show off in front of the coach who tried to recruit him to Texas Tech?
Ooh, I didn't see that.
Oh, my God. It was, like, the most eye roll.
Oklahoma State, by the way.
Okay, whatever. It's Twitter. The fact that anything I just said was remotely accurate. But people
were just like,
that's
good. I enjoy that one.
People were like, oh, he was just trying to be a hero in front of the guy. He, like, it's like some jilted lover type, like, you did me wrong type thing.
I enjoy that take.
Really? Because to me,
I'm sad I missed. I mean, no, it's a bad take.
I just
enjoy it. It's just funny. It's just funny.
Like, it just seemed to me like, okay, so we're grasping at straws for, like, some, like, some explanation as to why we lost to a team that basically dominated us for, I should probably stop saying us, but dominated for, like, what, better part of 30 minutes?
Yeah. Do you want to go in on Hardy? Because I've been saying he's my guy. He's my point guard, and he wasn't very good in this game.
Okay.
Like, he was really bad in this game.
My problem is I don't know how. Robot Ham, since we started calling him Robot Ham, looked better, but I just don't know who is going to be the distributor for this team.
Nobody. I mean, it's Amari Hardy or it's nobody.
And so, like, going in on him, yeah, that's fine, but at the same time,
he was 3 of 12 in this game with 2 assists, 29 minutes. Only had 1 turnover. But that's not good enough.
The 1 turnover was probably
important.
Yeah, you should probably have an asterisk next to it.
This one counts as 10. But take the last 3 possessions of this game. He took a bad 3 off the dribble. Now, it did result in an offensive rebound, and Joel Tomboy got free throws out of it. But They tried to run a play, and Amari Hardy just decided to pull up from 3 instead of taking one of the ball screens they were coming to set him. Second to last offensive possession. He did a good job. They called had a set play out of a timeout, and it worked pretty well. He got a driving layup, but he missed the layup. Backy John got an offensive rebound and dunked it, so it was okay. And then you had the final possession where he tried to do it on his own and the turnover. So UNLV had 3 bad possessions to end this game. I mean, the middle one was a good possession with a missed layup, but Amari Hardy was bad over the last 3 possessions, like really bad over the last 3 possessions. And when you start trying to look at this sort of point guard spot or just who's going to have the ball in their hands at the end of close games, I think it's Amari. Like, to me, it's Amari Hardy, but that was dreadful. Like, that, the end of that game was dreadful. And that's sort of what you, that's like, if you look, what do you have to do the rest of the season? That's it. Like, are you putting in Robotham's hands? Because he's not getting anywhere. Joel Tomboy? I don't know. Like, Amari Hardy's the answer. You're just going to have to ride with him not being able to convert things like that. Like, you're going to have really bad games for him. You'll have some good games too, but you're going to have really bad games like that if that's the only thing you can count on to be your ball handler.
So it's Clyburn.
No.
No, I'm saying like what it was last year where the game is either, oh, okay, yeah, he's going to be the reason we win, or he's going to like do nothing.
No, because Amori Hardy, you can kind of say, is a big reason why they lost the game. Clyburn's never really a reason you lose the game. Clyburn just disappears into nowhere. Like that. When Clyburn's bad, he's just not existent. Hardy, like, he didn't lose UNLV the game, but he's a big reason why they lost the game. Probably the bigger question is, what the hell is UNLV doing at the future for point guard? Like, ideally, Amori Hardy is sort of your secondary ball handler. Like, he's not your point guard. He's not a true point guard. Like, ideally, he's playing off the ball and like, oh, okay, you can have some possessions where you take a guy off a screen. You're playing well. We'll give you the ball some more today. But if you start looking to the future, no one on this current roster is good enough to be the primary point guard over Amori Hardy. That's why he's doing it right now. They have, in the 2019 class, Ethan Anderson as a potential point guard. He'll be a freshman next year. He is a three-star that is ranked outside the top 300 of all recruits. Do you trust that? Do you have confidence that that comes in and is immediately a good point guard? I don't. Like, I don't. So if you're looking big picture, Menzies probably needs to go find a transfer point guard for next year. Otherwise, you're looking at another season of Amori Hardy playing point guard or a true freshman playing point guard. Like, and that's not going to be good enough again. Like, it's not good enough this year. It's not going to be good enough next year either. So big picture, Menzies probably needs to go find a transfer point guard.
I was just going to mention Woodbury, but I'm not. It's not even a. Yeah,
he played.
That was the other interesting thing on Twitter was, why is Trey Woodbury playing so much? Why isn't Trey Woodbury playing more? Why, like, half the people seem to have no idea how to use him, and the other half are, why aren't we using him more?
I mean, Marvin Menzies doesn't know how to use him either.
No, that's, like, it's obvious from watching it. Like, no, like, we don't know what we're supposed to do with him, but we need more or less.
It's unfair to put so much blame on Hardy, by the way, because if you look, Clyburn was 1 of 8, Justin was 4 of 8, Hamilton was 1 of 6, and throwing Hardy's 3 of 12. Like, those are probably the four guys you look to the most for offense on this team, and they all were bad. And, like, take Justin, for example. He struggled because he could not get to the rim.
Yeah.
And if you remember, we talked on Friday, hey, Shakur Justin needs to have a big game because he's going to be guarded by a 6'4" guy. And Justin couldn't get to the rim against a 6'4" guy. Like, that's a problem. Like, we're 8 games into the season, and Justin's not any good. Like, he's shooting 44% from the floor. Last year, he shot 65%. At JUCO, he shot 60%. Like, the whole reason Shakur Justin is a good basketball player and was the number one JUCO player coming out of JUCO and was really good last season is because he's extremely efficient. It's because he gets close to the rim, he finishes. He's shooting 20 percentage points lower this year than he was last season. That's remarkably bad. Like, we talked early before the season started, all right, Houston's going to take on a bigger role.
Yeah.
Can he be as efficient? And I was like, all right, if he goes from 64% to 60%, you're okay with that. That's still good. If he falls to 58%, you're getting a little bit worried. He's at 44%. He is nowhere close to like, oh, we're a little bit worried. Like, he's not good. And this was not like he played some great front court. He's going up against guards. That's who was defending him. And he couldn't get to the rim. So
it's great because if you extrapolate it even like to the most simplistic terms, he's shooting 40% standing next to the rim.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it is. He takes too many mid-range jumpers. Last year he made a decent percentage. This year he's not making many at all. So I don't know. You just look at this team offensively, and they had a good final 5 minutes until those last three possessions, but it's like they're not going to be good enough on offense. Like, we're going to be saying that this whole year. But the bigger concern is that Shakur Justin isn't very good so far. Noah Robotham can't shoot, and Amori Hardy had a game where he looked terrible. Like, those are three guys that you need to be good on offense, at least one or two of them every game, and you've got serious question marks about all of them. Technically Correct, brought to you by Boyd Gaming. Try to be connected sports betting app. It is free to download. I messed up that read completely.
There are so many ways to be satisfied at the Orleans Hotel and Casino. Enjoy cocktails and steaks the way nature intended at Alder and Birch. visit the newly updated Prime Rib Loft. Experience the all-new Bailiwick Gastro Pub to share unique dining selections, try new craft draft beers, and enjoy great live music. Dine at Andori Asian Kitchen for authentic Chinese entrees, or choose from a large selection of sushi and Japanese cuisine. Check out the all-new Copper Whisk Cafe, open 24 hours with a menu that is sure to entice any palate. So savor the latest and greatest variety of flavors at the Orleans.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants.
No, I don't want to go to a party in your pants.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants!
Bischoff's Briefs.
Very well.
Marc-Andre Fleury has started the last 10 Golden Knights games.
He is on pace to start 72 games this season.
That seems like a lot.
Only one goalie in the last 10 years has started 65 games or more and won the Stanley Cup. Goalie rest is important. We've been talking about it for the last week or so. And the Golden Knights are not resting Fleury at all. We'll talk to Ryan Wallace about this. He had a really strong take on the post-game show on Saturday about Fleury and Subban that I want to get to with him. But the hypothetical here is Gallant has a win-now attitude. So this hypothetical question for you. Fleury starts, we'll say, 68 games. Because Gallant did say post-game last night, we don't plan on playing him 75 games. So they'll play him 72. All good. But let's say Fleury starts like 68. Still a lot. Golden Knights make the playoffs, but then they get swept in the first round and Fleury is bad. Or Fleury plays 55 games and Vegas misses the playoffs by a few points.
No, we're going to the playoffs.
Yeah, and I think that's what Gallant is thinking. Like, I think his mindset is they have to get as many points as possible, and Marc-Andre Fleury on no rest gives them the best shot at that, so that's what he's doing. Now, that being said, every team in the league thinks they need to get as many points as possible. So, but they're all resting their goalies.
So there's no true tanking.
You're right. Not everybody. Most teams. But it's just, I think that's Gallant's mindset, is we need to play Marc-Andre Fleury as much as possible because we need to make the playoffs. Whereas this idea of, oh, you don't win the Stanley Cup unless your goalie's rested is, he's like, he's not worried about winning the Stanley Cup. He's worried about making the playoffs. Like, that's what's important to him. And then, let's see if we can win the Stanley Cup with a tired goalie. So, I don't know. We'll see. My pushback on it is, you need to rest him. Like, Malcolm Subban should be able to get you some points. Like, he shouldn't be that big of a drop-off. So, I don't know. We'll see. But we did get Gerard Gallant. He's not angry. He did this in fun. But Gerard Gallant yelling at Jesse Granger of The Athletic.
And the start of this year, you would always alternate the goalies on back-to-backs, two in a row for Fleury. Just what's going into that other than just the amount of hours between the games?
I didn't do that last year at all.
Well, Dave Pryor did.
Exactly. So they asked the question right, and I'll tell you.
Okay.
So last
just
year...
Just kidding, Jesse. Okay. I know you.
Ask the question right, and I'll tell you. Is that better than...
I think him
telling Jesse, is that what you saw?
No, because the slight exhausted dadness of, really, Jesse? Like, that of the, is that what you saw, is, like, my favorite part.
Yeah. Is that what you saw? Gallant is genuinely angry in that moment. This one, he's genuinely just trying to screw with The Athletic. So it's great.
Ryan Carpenter scored his first goal of the season.
Good for Ryan Carpenter. 9 goals, 36 games last year. He only has 1 in 30 this season, so it's good that he scored. I'm disappointed, though, because Oscar Lindberg had an assist here. Gallant praised the third line after the game. They had the best Corsi of any forward line, which all means we're not going to see Reed Duke play. And that's all I want. Like, just play Reed Duke. Like, come on. Like, just put him in there. I'm not as attached to him as Jake Bischoff, obviously. But I want to see Reed Duke play. The other thing, I'm also bitter about Reed Duke just a little bit, because the last two home games, Reed Duke has dressed for pregame warmups and skated around. Gallant's like, "Oh, I'm not going to tell you who's playing. You're going to have to wait." Jake Bischoff never got to do that. So Reed Duke technically has been closer to playing an NHL game than Jake Bischoff ever was, and I'm not very happy about that.
UNLV got a commitment from cornerback Aaron Lewis.
JUCO transfer, 2 years left. He is a two-star from Chaffee College.
Have you been on the Chaffee College football Twitter page?
No.
They are heavily in, like, the Mountain West is, like, in an arms race for Chaffee College transfers. It's really funny.
His other offers, no other Mountain West schools. His other offers, Southern Utah, Tennessee Tech, and Houston Baptist. So not really a star-studded list there. But take JUCO transfers, and the big point I'll always make when you get a JUCO transfer is you usually expect that guy to play right away. And that's why it was curious to me when they got the offensive lineman, because it's like, oh, I thought Sanchez has been saying that's a strength of theirs. Cornerback is not a strength of UNLV, so there's a good chance this guy plays right away, even if it's not a star-studded offer list that he has there. Overall, 16 commits in the class. Now, 5 on defense, 9 on offense, 2 are considered athletes. 10 of those 16 are 3-stars. Sanchez also did tweet out that they got 2 commits yesterday, but we don't know who the second one is, or at least I don't know who the second one is, so maybe we'll have more news on that tomorrow.
The Raiders beat the Steelers 24-21 on Sunday.
They were in control of the number one pick for like 20 minutes yesterday.
I know.
And then they blew it because the 49ers beat the Broncos. So it was the Raiders were going to be the only 2-win team in the NFL. And then Derek Carr decided to be good. Like, he was like, hey, I'm going to. He was 5 of 7 on the final drive. And they did a great job of like running the clock down to where the Steelers, well, I thought the Steelers didn't have time to do anything, but almost giving the Steelers no time to do anything. Like, Carr has no wide receivers. Like, Seth Roberts is his best wide receivers. Like, he's out here making Derek Carrier and Lee Smith, and he's been doing Jared Cook the whole year. Like, he's making these random blocking tight ends look like decent receivers. Like, Derek Carr was good.
Oh, no. There were some throws that I was like, okay, Derek Carr just fit the ball in between, like, doubles, like, 2 defenders collapsing on zone coverage, and he fit the ball in the pocket that it had to be in for there to be any completion whatsoever, and he made it a catchable ball, which I'm like, if you're capable of doing that, why haven't you been doing that?
Amari Cooper could be great for this team. The defense was ready to tank, though. They give up the hook and lateral. Steelers get into field goal range, and it's like, oh, man. They are committed to this tank. But then Chris Boswell decides to slip and miss the game-tying field goal. That was no fun. So, anyways, 3rd pick in the draft now for the Raiders. They fell a spot. San Francisco, Arizona, Raiders all 3-10. Raiders lose the tiebreaker to pretty much anybody in the NFL. And the big problem is you have, what is it? It's Atlanta, the Jets, Buffalo, and Jacksonville are all 4-9. So if the Raiders screw around and win another game, they're in danger of falling out of the top 5, which would be a nightmare. Like, what are you doing here?
I think it's time for A.J. McCarron. Raiders general manager Reggie McKenzie has been fired.
NFL Network reporting that. I believe The Athletic and The Review Journal have both confirmed it. He was apparently was given the chance to stay by Mark Davis, but McKenzie said, no, thanks. I'm gonna stay through the end of the year. But McKenzie's like, no, I'm just going to leave now.
I'm good.
Yeah. It's funny because Reggie McKenzie drafted Khalil Mack, who's clearly a star. Reggie McKenzie drafted Amari Cooper, and as soon as he gets traded away, Amari Cooper is now a monster for the Cowboys. And even in this game, Gerrion Conley and Carl Joseph, 2 of McKenzie's more recent early picks that Gruden hasn't gotten rid of yet, played really well against the Steelers. I think Joseph played every single snap, and I think Conley played all but one, and Conley had a couple really good pass breakups. Like, they played every snap and were good. So, like, it's not all of McKenzie's picks, but, like, a lot of his recent picks look like really good football players, and John Gruden's the one getting rid of them, or in Conley and Carl Joseph's place. He did not play them for the first half of the year because he wanted to play his 32-year-old defensive backs because, oh, Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie, that was going to work out really well for you. So, like, it's just funny to fire McKenzie now because the players he drafted look like they're, oh, good at football. And it's more of, oh, your coach is a moron. And that's why the team's not any good, not because the talent wasn't there. But I don't know. You screw up, you get fired. We need to put together, like, tomorrow or Wednesday, like, all of the John Gruden quotes about how working with Reggie McKenzie is great and how everything was going to go fine and how the media was making it a bigger deal that they technically had two general managers. Yeah, McKenzie didn't make it through one season with Gruden.
Joel and Tomboy led UNLV with 18 points against Illinois.
I don't know what to do with Tomboy. He was good in this game. All of a sudden, he's got the best three-point percentage for UNLV on the team. Granted, it's only 13. He's 6 of 13, so it's not like he's shot a ton. But he's good at shooting, or better than everybody else. I don't know. What I like about him, but his offensive potential, he could be a really good sort of slasher, because he's 6'9", and they play him on the wing. And he seems to have, at times, a good first step and the strength that he can get to the rim and finish. So, like, there's potential that he could be a really good slasher. He is a straight-line guy, though. Like, Amori Hardy can get to the rim because Amori Hardy can cross guys over. Tomboy, he's just going straight, and he's going to run you over if he doesn't stop. So, like, he doesn't really have the handles to do that. But what I don't like is that he takes the worst shot in basketball. He takes the not only the mid-range jumper, he takes the off-the-dribble pull-up mid-range jumper, and he does it all of the time. Like, when he tries to drive and he gets cut off, that's what he does. He's like, yep, 16 feet, yep, this is, I'm shooting it right here. So he takes the worst shot in basketball. So that sort of needs to be phased out.
The shot that you're least likely to be fouled on, and it's not efficient. Great.
So, like, I think he's got the potential to be a good player, but I don't think, like, right now he's any sort of sustainable offensive weapon. But you can say that about everybody on this team, honestly. So I don't know what to do with Tomboy at the moment, because I'm like, yeah, there's some things I like, but he also takes the worst shots on the team. But everybody's not any good at offense, so I don't know what to do.
I gotta figure out how to spell his name for highlights.
Tomas Tatar scored his 12th goal of the season on Sunday.
You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff, brought to you by Boyd Gaming.
What if they're just, like, on the bubble by the last day of Hanukkah?
That's what, December 10th? I would say if they are in a playoff spot by December 10th, they will make the playoffs.
So Hanukkah.
So Hanukkah's the one we're going to go with. That's the holiday that we're going to measure the Golden Knights and their playoff probability by.
You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
It is December 10th. Ryan Wallace of the Golden Knights Insider Show is here, and the Golden Knights are in a playoff spot, and there is nothing that can happen tonight that would knock the Golden Knights out of a playoff spot.
Not only that, there is something that could happen tonight that will put them in third place in the Pacific Division.
Got to get a San Jose loss.
Exactly, a loss by San Jose, who hasn't really been that good this year, so it's possible that the Golden Knights not only are in a wild card spot, but actually top three in the Pacific Division by the end of Hanukkah.
All right, we got to play our very important imaging here, just so Jared can keep taking his victory lap.
Happy Hanukkah. Are the Golden Knights in a playoff spot?
Yes, they are. So, Ryan, do you feel okay with Jared taking complete credit for this?
No. I suppose he brought the idea to the forefront, but it was really me who took a leap of faith in saying that a team that was below 500 would somehow magically be in a playoff spot by the end of Hanukkah, but it's a Hanukkah miracle.
Do those exist? Is that a thing?
That's the premise. The whole idea of Hanukkah, Tyler.
I have no idea what the premise of Hanukkah is. I thought it was just 8 days of flexible Christmas.
I mean, that's what it's adapted to. That's what it's become. But it was actually a miracle with oil. That's why we eat everything in oil this entire 8 days.
I didn't know.
Everything I've put in my mouth has been deep fried. I'm ready for Hanukkah to be over.
I am not touching whatever you just said about putting things in your mouth and being deep fried. This is going to happen every year, though. We're going to track this, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess we're only going to track it if they actually make the playoffs.
That's right. They do need to. They have not made the playoffs yet. As much as I would like for the playoff spot to be clinched now, they have not done that yet. Yeah. So this Hanukkah thing's a thing.
Well, it's now a thing.
Now it's
assuming they make the playoffs. If they don't make the playoffs, then we're going to have to measure it by like New Year's Day or something like that next year. But we'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
If they don't make the playoffs, we can give Jared all of the credit, right?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like, if they don't make the playoffs, then it's clearly Jared's fault. If they do make the playoffs, then it's all about me and my ability to prognosticate that by the end of Hanukkah, this team would be great.
Ryan Wallace, Ryan the Hockey Guy with us, VGK Insider Show. Merely a speed bump for Dan Duva on the post-game show after Golden Knights games. Marc-Andre Fleury, 10 straight starts. And you said it was after the Los Angeles game on the post-game show. You were talking about Malcolm Subban and the chances that Fleury would start again on the back-to-back, and he didn't. And basically what you said was that if Malcolm Subban doesn't play on Sunday, why is he on the roster? So I'll ask you that question. Why is Malcolm Subban on the roster?
I mean, I don't know. At some point, you've got to have the confidence in the ability of your backup goalie to go into a game and get you a win. And Malcolm Subban is without a win so far this season. I would argue that he hasn't played particularly poorly in his starts. He just hasn't gotten any effort really in front of him from his teammates. So when you couple that with the fact that Marc-Andre Fleury is playing very well and that you are still bunched up in this mess of mediocrity in the Pacific Division, yes, I understand the need for points, but a lot of other teams need points too, and a lot of other teams are playing their backup goalie. So my question is, does the organization have faith in Malcolm Subban to go in and get a win? It seems to me that the longer they go without starting Malcolm Subban, the less faith they have in his ability to get a win. And if that's the case, not saying it is, but if that is the case, why is Malcolm Subban your backup goalie?
Well,
it just doesn't make sense to me.
I'll give you this. So Gerard Gallant says last night, you know, it's not so much about Malcolm Subban, it's more about trusting Marc-Andre Fleury, and they think he can play these back-to-backs. But the other thing Gallant said was that Fleury is playing well. And the three games prior to Sunday, Fleury's save percentage was .872. He'd given up 3.7 goals against. He did not play good at all against the Kings. So, like, I don't find that argument to have a ton of substance. It's like, oh, he's just on a hot streak. We got to keep him in there. Like, I think them not playing Subban on Sunday against the Stars is them, they're already saying they lost faith in him. Like, I don't think we need to see more. Like, it's a back-to-back. They don't play him. Fleury didn't play well the night before. Like, I don't think we need more. I think that's pretty clear evidence they don't trust Subban.
Well, I think when you look at the LA Kings game, I think you're giving Marc-Andre Fleury a chance to redeem himself, right? I don't think that he was the biggest issue in that loss. Again, it was one of those games where it almost felt like they were playing in front of Malcolm Subban. That was the effort that was given on that night by the Golden Knights. However, you want Marc-Andre Fleury to go right back out there and get his confidence back, and I understand it from that perspective, but if it were me, I would have started Malcolm Subban in LA, because to me, the LA game was a waste of a start for Marc-Andre Fleury, especially as the first part of a back-to-back when you're going across time zones and you've got a four-game road trip with another back-to-back. I would argue that Malcolm Subban needs to get into a game on this road trip. If you have another situation where you play Marc-Andre Fleury in a back-to-back situation, it would be his 14th consecutive start and his third set of back-to-backs, then I really don't understand what Malcolm Subban's doing.
You want to make fun of The Athletic with us?
No, because I'm in tune with what Jesse's saying. I assume that we're talking about goalies.
Yeah, no, we're just making fun of Gerard Gallant giving him a hard time last night.
Oh, see that? Yeah, okay, I'm all for that. I was going to say, I agree with Jesse about this being way too many starts for Marc-Andre Fleury, but I absolutely love the fact that Gerard Gallant gave Jesse a ton of crap last night.
I can't believe I asked you, do you want to make fun of Jesse Granger, and your initial response wasn't absolutely.
Well, I mean, it always is, but again, I didn't want him to stand out on a hill by himself alone in this village on the goaltender stuff, because I agree with him.
All right, here's the audio from last night.
And the start of this year, you would always alternate the goalies on back-to-backs, two in a row for Fleury. Just what's going into that other than just the amount of hours between the games?
I didn't do that last year at all.
Well, Dave Pryor did.
Exactly. So they asked the question right, and I'll tell you.
Okay.
So last
just
year,
kidding. Dave... Yes, okay. I know.
What do you like better, ask the question right and I'll tell you, or is that what you saw, Jesse?
Is that what you saw, Jesse? Is still hands down the best Turk versus Granger moment that we've ever had. But this one, ask the question right, is great because typically Gerard Gallant doesn't actually answer anything when it comes to goaltenders. And for some reason, Jesse Granger flubbing the entire question and then going back, he actually got an answer, which was nice. So kudos to the Athletic for, you know, sticking his neck out there and, you know, getting yelled at by Gerard Gallant. And then finally getting an answer when it came to the goalies and what the plan is, and that's to not play Marc-Andre Fleury 75 games.
Breaking news, like 15 minutes ago, Reed Duke is being sent back to the Chicago Wolves. You think that means Paul Stastny's coming back on this road trip to play games?
Yeah, it looks like there's no corresponding moves, at least not right now, so it would seem to indicate to me that Paul Stastny is very close to getting off of IR, and if that's the case, he would be with the team. He is traveling to New York, so the question then becomes, how quickly does Paul Stastny get into a game?
Second or third line when he comes back?
Third line.
That's the wrong answer.
Oh, it's going to be third line. I mean, I think you give Cody Eakin, Alex Tuch, and Max Pacioretty a couple more games to kind of see if that chemistry can continue. You put Paul Stastny into a situation where he's either playing with Ryan Carpenter and Nosek, or Nosek and Lindbergh, who's been very good since coming back into the lineup. And then you see if there's a little bit of chemistry somewhere with those mixture of four players, Stastny, Nosek, Lindbergh, Carpenter. And if you have some chemistry, you kind of roll with it. If Eakin starts to kind of falter or he isn't being productive, then you move Stastny into that role as a second-line center. I do believe he will get there, but I don't think he's going to start there.
Paul Stastny, he needs to go straight to the second line. I don't want to see this third line. I don't care about Oscar Lindbergh and Ryan Carpenter. Get him there with Max Pacioretty. That's what we care
about. You should.
Is Stastny and Max Pacioretty. Put them on the ice together. That's what we've been missing.
No, I agree with you. I mean, I think it will happen. I just don't think it's going to happen immediately because Paul Stastny is going to need a little bit of time to get his conditioning back, to get himself ready to play in games. It's been a long time. He's only played three games this season. So you give him a little bit of time to get acclimated, give him some power play minutes as well. And then once he's ready to kind of take a bigger role, then you make the move. But I don't think you mess up that second line right away.
It's Ryan Wallace, VGK Insider Show on Fox 1340, Golden Knights pre- and post-game show as well. He's at Ryan Hockey Guy on Twitter. Thanks for joining us, Ryan.
All right, thanks, buddy.
Mazel Tov.
This ball is by far the worst, yeah. Suppress emotion. It's not allowed. You can't be happy about hitting a home run. It's against the rules.
Fastball, high drive in a deep center. O'Malley going back, going back, going back, going back, and he jumps up, and O'Malley can't get the ball, and the ball's into straightaway center field. Weeks has to go over to get it. Here comes McNeil. He's coming around third. Here's the throw. He slides. He is safe, and that is an inside the park home run.
Technically correct with Tyler Bischoff.
The Las Vegas Aviators are officially a team, and we have the worst logo ever. This is so bad.
And oh.
We do an audio medium, and you need to be able to see this logo. I assume people that listen to our show have seen this logo.
I don't want to. I wouldn't wish this on my enemy's pets.
What, just seeing it?
Yeah, like...
This logo, all right.
It legitimately looks like if Ant-Man was like drawn by somebody who had just vaguely been told what Ant-Man looks like.
The biggest mistake here is that they went with a person's face for the logo instead of like a plane.
Fair enough, yeah.
Like, that's the biggest problem. That's the biggest mistake they made. Now, you can do better with a face than this thing that they put out. Like, first off, I don't know what's going on most of the time in this logo. The biggest problem with, after you get by, okay, they used a face. The biggest problem with the logo itself is that the primary thing you see is a pair of goggles. And that's dumb. Like, who cares about goggles? Like, it's just a stupid thing. There's nothing cool about goggles. They weren't going for, like, goofy minor league, like the Montgomery Biscuits, where it's a stupid biscuit with his butter, a thing of butter as his tongue. Like, that's hilarious. No, they were trying to go for a serious logo, and the primary thing is goggles. That's stupid. Nobody likes goggles. Nobody thinks goggles are cool. Then it's like there's this unfinished V. And obviously that's like Las Vegas, but it's not finished. So it just, and it's just cutting his goggles. It's just, it's a very, they tried to force in a V and it doesn't work. Like the Golden Knights logo, the V works. Like if you were trying to make that into a real helmet to wear, it wouldn't work. Like that would not, you couldn't be able to see out of it. But like just the logo itself, the V works. Like that's the opening of the helmet. But this, they forced it in there and it does not work at all. So the goggles, stupid. The unfinished V, forcing it in there. Then you get to the guy's actual face and there's only half of a face there. And I don't know if they're trying to like make the bottom of his face look like the tail of a plane or something. I don't really know. But the face just looks stupid too. The one thing I do like is sort of the Red Rock Mountains in the goggles, the reflection of the goggles. That's pretty cool. I like that touch. But like, I just don't know. It's a bad logo. Like the name is fine, like Aviators. I don't love it. I don't hate it. It's fine. Have you seen the hats with just the LV logo?
Yeah.
That looks really good.
Yeah.
They've got like woodwork, which is just says Las Vegas Aviators. That looks good too. I like the color scheme because you've got navy blue and then you've got the red, yellow, orange like the Houston Astros used to have. Like I like the color scheme itself, but the logo is just bad.
I did find it strange how everyone was basically like, oh, I love the name, but I don't like the logo. And I was sort of like, I'm kind of lukewarm on the name.
Yeah, it's fine. Like it's not terrible, but it's not. Doesn't not great or anything. So what's worse, Aviators logo or the UNLV logo they introduced a year and a half ago?
The Aviators logo, because it reminds me of Waspinator, which is a literal reference that me and maybe one other person would get.
You do like the UNLV logo too, so you're strange. They're both bad. They're both faces, by the way. That's a primary thing here. They're faces. Don't make faces as your logo unless it's a biscuit that you've turned into a butter as its tongue.
Or a baby cake.
But the UNLV new logo is significantly better than this one.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't think it's remotely close. Like, this is a really, really bad logo. Like, it's awful. It's just horrific. And, yeah.
It's somehow busy, but also, like, feels, like, sloppy. Does that make sense? Like, it feels like they did too much while not completing anything.
Yeah, I think that's fair. The V's not complete. The face isn't complete. Yeah. It's just not a good logo at all. And it's sort of unanimous that it's not a good logo. And it's like, people didn't like when almost every time a logo gets introduced, people don't like it. When the Golden Knights logo got introduced, lots of people hated it. But for the most part, people have gotten over that because that logo is fine. Like, it's not anything great, but it's fine. The UNLV logo, though, hated because it's a bad logo. This is more in the category of that than just, oh, it'll go away. This isn't going away. People are not going to like this logo forever.
Tyler, you're a bitch.